Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
Welcome to another edition of News and Views. Thanks for joining us. The General Assembly will convene yet another special session in January with no word on a possible agenda. Lawmakers met the first week of October in a special session and took up legislation to redraw judicial districts, roll back more environmental regulations, and abolish judicial primaries. They did not address a crisis faced by many schools because of a legislative mandate to reduce class size. Here to talk about the special session and why schools need more help is Representative Greg Meyer from Orange County. Representative Meyer, thanks for being back with us on News and Views. We appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me, Chris.
Well, let's talk about last week's special session. One thing a lot of folks interested in education policy thought should happen is something to address the class size struggles that we're having in schools.
What a huge missed opportunity, and what an obvious sign that this legislature is hostile to public education. There are lots of people who work in the schools who feel like this legislature has done a lot of things to purposefully hurt public schools and promote privatization of schools. And to me, nothing has made me feel stronger about the truth of that kind of theory that this is really antipathy towards schools in this class size thing. The only reason to not address this unfunded class size mandate is if you want schools to fail. They are leaving in place a requirement in the early grades that we don't have the capability to meet with the number of teachers required, the number of classrooms and school buildings required. And it's not only impacting the number of classrooms in the early grades, it's impacting students all the way through 12th grade, because in order to compensate for the mandate in grades K through 3, school districts are having to shift resources from all across the district, and that means class sizes are going up in every other grade. It's just ridiculous. You only leave it in place if you want schools to fail.
Republican legislative leaders claim that schools aren't using their resources adequately, which then puts the burden on schools to prove it. It makes it a difficult proposition, I think.
Well, it's just like we're going to have this school finance study in the legislature about how should we be paying for schools. And it was purposefully left out whether that study should look at, are we adequately paying for schools? And so it's the argument that the Senate Republican leadership has made that the money isn't being spent well. There's just not enough money.
One final question about that. In the early drafts of bills that people, some reporters got, I don't know if you guys saw them, the House did have a temporary fix to the class size thing, not a permanent one, but even that was taken out.
The House voted unanimously for a fix earlier in this year's legislative session. And you're right, there was a bill that was introduced this time that included the original House fix. For whatever reason, the House Republicans folded to the Senate Republicans, and we did nothing.
A couple other interesting items in that same budget. They called it a technical corrections bill, things that were in it. One, I think the most peculiar, and it's a minor thing, but it really does, I think, is illustrative of how things are working. We're going to maybe build part of an aquarium facility in a private residential development?
Right. This is a boondoggle. You know, we already have coastal aquariums. They need continued funding and maybe even increased funding to really be world-class museums. And so we're going to build a specialty aquarium in Pender County that's not even on the coast. It's going to draw people away from the other aquariums. Clearly was done as pork funding for either one or two legislators and a specific developer who wanted to benefit for this. It's just an example of how the Republican leadership has failed to live up to their own ideals. And they promised they would come in and not do this type of pork barrel spending, but here they go just giving handouts to their friends and their members.
And what is it like as a member of the General Assembly when you come to town every month not knowing what's on the agenda? There's no calendar, or things like this provision sort of pop up in a committee at the last minute. It must be difficult to do your job.
This is a horrible way of doing the people's business. When we come in for these special sessions, so first of all, we're not supposed to be in session at all. We're supposed to be out of session and adjourned until next spring. So we come in because we've got something specific to do, like we're going to address the governor's veto. So fine, I know what the stakes are on that. But then all of these other things get introduced just because we happen to be in town. It's all been negotiated behind closed doors. There's no real time for public debate. Often the bills are being negotiated up until the minute that they come to us on the floor. And so even members of the General Assembly, Democrats and Republicans sometimes, don't have the opportunity to read the bill, vet the bill, research what's in it, share it with our constituents before we vote on it. This is the worst kind of government.
Another bill that passed was a bill to redraw the districts for Superior Court judges, district court judges, and district attorneys. What do you make of this whole process?
Well, clearly this is part of a coordinated effort by Republicans to control every element of our government. They were very transparent in saying that they were doing the redistricting of judicial districts for their own partisan advantage. They want to elect more Republicans. And so, you know, people don't like gerrymandering when it happens to legislators. I don't think people will like it at all when it happens to the courts. People understand that the courts are supposed to be our most impartial element of the three branches of government. The courts should be fair. They shouldn't be politicized. But the most untold story of this year's General Assembly session has been all of the steps along the way that the Republicans have taken to politicize our courts.
They attached to an electoral freedom bill, which has a lot of other provisions, but they actually eliminated the primary in judicial races.
And who eliminates elections, and specifically elections for judges? I mean, banana dictators, despots? Eliminating judicial elections is one of the worst forms of government. I mean, I just keep coming up with these superlatives for how bad these things are, but this special session had nothing good and so many bad things. I'm glad the governor vetoed that bill. I hope we can sustain that, the governor's veto. But, you know, they canceled the judicial primaries because they have more plans for screwing with the judiciary that are going to come, that they're going to introduce in January. And they were worried that if they try to move to a legislative appointment system for judges and don't let people elect judges at all, that if there were people who had filed for judicial elections in 2018 before that law went into effect, that they would have standing to sue and block the law. So what did they do? They took away the elections altogether.
If you just look at it on its face, without it, which everybody, I think, assumes that that's what's happening, if everything stayed the same and the primary was gone, you could literally have, we had I think, 20 people run for the Court of Appeals not too many years ago. You could have somebody elected to the court with 8 or 9% of the vote.
So people are worried about voting integrity right now for some good reasons and some fake reasons. But just imagine this. Imagine if every judicial race on the ballot has an unlimited number of candidates. How many pages would that ballot be? Do we want multi-page ballots? Does that make it easier or harder to manipulate your vote? This is just bad, bad, bad.
They overrode the governor's veto of a bill which allegedly dealt with Gen X funding, but they still refused to fund the Department of Environmental Quality.
The governor's asking for about $2.5 million to do cleanup of the Cape Fear River, take care of Gen X, and begin testing for other types of pollutants that we haven't yet figured out what they are or what they do. $2.5 million. There is $500 million unbudgeted in this year's budget. Could be spent on anything. Could be spent on teacher raises. Could be spent on fixing the Cape Fear River. Could be spent on improving infrastructure in the state. There's a number of things we could do with that. They won't even give the governor 0.5% of that amount that's unbudgeted to take care of this disaster in the Cape Fear River.
It does seem as if they're more interested in trying to blame him for something than give him money to fix it.
Well, what we see here is exactly what happened at the national scene when national Republicans tried to block every single thing that Barack Obama did when he became president. If you just watch the rhetoric from Senator Berger, you can see that he has one goal and one goal alone, and that's to blame Roy Cooper for as much as possible.
Well, maybe we'll end up back on education the way we started. It wasn't a special session issue, but the innovative school district, so-called, is proceeding ahead. Now we have news this week that the sponsor of the bill, who's no longer in the legislature, now has a company that might actually be one of the companies who profits from innovative school district.
Surprise.
What did you make of all this news?
Well, we need a real approach to how we address schools that are chronically underperforming. The innovative school district is not that approach. It's too small, it's not ambitious enough, and to your point, it's way too close to privatization. I mean, it's a wide open door, basically, to profiteers who want to make money off of some of our most needy children. We've seen that happen in other states that have similar things. I hope that we can prevent it here, but I'm afraid with, you know, things like what you just pointed out that we're headed in that direction too.
Well, thanks for all you're doing in the General Assembly. We appreciate you being with us. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Up next, what North Carolina voters think of President Trump. Stay tuned.